You're listening to Cincinnati Edition on a Friday on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Purcell. There was a time not long ago when wetland areas were thought of as useless or, worse, breeding grounds for disease. But wetlands provide values no other ecosystem can. Cincinnati Zoo and Botanical Garden Director Thane Maynard speaks with Brian Jorg, the zoo's manager of horticulture, about the vital role wetland areas play in our ecosystem and about ongoing efforts to preserve and restore them.
All right, Brian Jorg, it's fun to see you here at a studio at the radio station, not just in the garden at the zoo.
Likewise. Thanks for having me.
Now, you're always fun to be with because I always learn something about plants at the zoo, and particularly when we're out in the field, because your knowledge going way back, obviously of native plants, but of other native species, and your history with the zoo is something too. How long have you been involved at the zoo?
I think we're about 14 years now, so it's adding up.
Now, you say 14, but that's full time. You were a boy at the zoo.
Yeah, I took the original junior zoology classes, which I have to say laid the course for me later in life. Those classes certainly were beyond any expectation that I had of outdoors. And then certainly that, and with the way I was raised on always being outside, it dovetailed nicely. And it was that education that gave me that basis and helped further the passion. I think it's I had that passion very early on to learn everything I could possibly get my hands on outside. So
it's certainly a good tribute to any listeners to get their kids outside, get unplugged, and get out and start asking questions.
Yeah, I think it's all too evident that we're relying on screens to become babysitters. And I think getting children out and certainly stimulating that natural sense of wonder, it's there. It's primal. It's as a species. We need to learn and expand our minds. And if you foster that, it just exponentially takes off. And I think for me, it is very important for my children to get them out, get them excited about and lead the natural questions that will lay a foundation for the rest of their life.
Absolutely. Now, among the many things you do in the zoo's botanical garden is lead the way with native plants, and that's at the zoo itself. So tell a little bit about what we're doing there, and then I also want to hear about how we do some things farther afield. But locally, I know it seems as if we have some really neat gardens near our renovated Passenger Pigeon Memorial.
Yes. The native plant program, basically what we're trying to do, it's multifaceted. You know, a certain large percentage of that is direct conservation. We're working with some of the rarest plants in conjunction with CREW. I think we have one of the best plant labs, certainly in North America. In conjunction with them, we're working on projects around the Midwest and farther afield for replacing some of our native endangered flora. With that, we certainly have display gardens to try to tell our story and cryopreservation and a lot of the elements of that program. And just trying to get it out in the public and show the full scope of what we do there at the zoo. But another portion of that, and to me it's kind of two-pronged, is education about native plants. I think it's dual-faceted. I think on one end you need to educate the public and tell them the importance of a lot of these plants. You know, for example, the plight of the monarch and the milkweed being its primary larval source is getting more milkweed out. And everybody thinks of the common milkweed, which, you know, doesn't have the best reputation, but there's 12 species here in the Midwest, and no matter what type of garden you have, whether it's wet soil, dry soil, full sun, part shade, there's a plant that will fit that palette. So why just grow one or two species when there's 12? So once you educate the public, you also have to educate, I believe, the industry, the green industry, and say, okay, here's this plant palette, which is absolutely magnificent. Why are we only growing two species, you know? And so what we're trying to do is grow all of them from a production standpoint, from a garden standpoint, and pull out some other ones. Why aren't we growing purple milkweed? Why aren't we growing some of these other ones? And that way, when we go and talk to the industry, we can say, here it is. You can start with this as a plug. You can grow it from seed. It is very easy. And in 6 weeks, you can finish a plant. And then once they start producing it, then you have a waiting market for you, and then just pull it on through. So we're trying to expand the palette of plants used in the home landscape, because I think it's far too boring when you drive down some of these newer subdivisions and you see the entire landscape consists of maybe six plants, six species. You know, you have to have the obligatory pear, which is its own story. You know, a couple taxes up against the foundation, maybe some barberry
and a hosta,
and you're all set. You know, that's the gardening in Cincinnati. But what we're trying to do is really break that mold and say, you know, let's create some of that diversity, get it back in the landscape, and I think we'd have a better off. Our ecosystem would be much better off.
Well, and I can say from having moved in the last year and you helped and advised us and literally helped at our garden, you know, there's sometimes this myth of, well, I don't know about native plants, or they're going to look like some weeds, or, oh, I don't know, is it somehow difficult? Well, the truth is, because they're native to here, they actually don't take a lot of TLC once you plant them and if you plant them right.
Exactly. Right plant, right place, which has always been our motto, no matter what the plant is. Put it in. If you have sunny exposure, put in a plant that loves the sun and get it established. And once it's established, it can certainly handle our climate norms, from dreadfully hot summers to cold winters. And a lot of the species that live around here are, a lot of them are keyed in on the species. So you have the plants that are great for hummingbirds. You have the plants that will be great larval food for, mm-hmm. for butterflies, the plants that have the seed mm-hmm. for, you know, various finches or, you know, pick the bird species. So by putting those elements back into the home landscape, you're creating more corridors for these species to thrive.
I have been amazed by that because living right in the city, I live less than 2 miles from the Cincinnati Zoo in Avondale. The variety of bird species in my yard, not just hummingbirds and goldfinches, which are reason enough, two of my favorite birds, but a great variety just with the little garden we have. And honestly, our yard, as you've seen, is not very big. And yet, if you get the right flowering plants, right nesting areas, you can have some animals around.
Yeah, everybody's yard is a piece of the puzzle. And if there's enough pieces in a given area, certainly you complete more of the picture and it helps things thrive. Certainly at the zoo, being right in the center of the city, you know, this morning, rose-breasted grosbeaks are moving through. And it seemed like wherever I went, they were just absolutely everywhere. We had a barred owl sitting outside our office Monday morning, red-shouldered hawks. You can go through and during migration, it is amazing being in an inner city as a migrant trap, how many birds actually will traverse right through the center of the city.
You know what's funny? That's one reason that Gary Densler, our bird trainer, stops his shows on Labor Day and doesn't push. You know, the weather's fine.
Yes.
He could push through October. But the migrating hawks, while he's flying all sorts of
makes
birds.
Makes everybody nervous.
Oh, my gosh. He's had birds taken by, you know, Cooper's hawks and others. And he's like, I'm not doing this anymore. You know, he spends 3 years training a bird and then it gets eaten. That's a problem. But it's amazing. And our gardens really are something. Now, okay, here's a commonly asked question. People say, no, wait a minute. You say you're an accredited botanical garden, and there aren't very many, but there's gardens all over the place. You know, there's gardens here and there. So what is the distinction between us being an accredited botanical garden and others maybe not?
The accreditation process is huge. It takes a long time to pull those records together. And it's everything from accessions. When we get a plant, we start tracking immediately. Who did we get it from? If I bring in if I collect seed, there's a number assigned to it, the accession number. It tells where it was collected from, and it's followed through the plant's entire journey. So it comes in, I grow it, I get small plants. A couple years in the nursery, I bump them up into bigger pots. The number follows it. We plant it out, that accession number will follow it. And on the larger plants, woody plants, there will actually be a tag that will have that number on there. Now, you put that into our database, and it tells you when we bought it, where it came from. So if I collected the seed under permit around any geographical area, I will know exactly where the provenance of seed came from. Even our trees, we know exactly what nursery they came from. All of this is tracked. We do a lot of work with certainly with conservation. So it's more than just a collection of trees. It's a lot more of the deeper tracking. Where do we get the plants from? Conservation work. It's all that rolled into one. So it is fairly extensive to get certified.
Absolutely, and neat programs, as we said, that aren't just on our 80 acres right there in Avondale, but throughout the community. Community gardens is an important part of what you and your team do, as well as tell a bit about. Speaking of native plants, I've been very impressed with the wetland comeback that you've played the lead role on up in Warren County.
That's probably my the favorite project of my career. It rolls every passion that I have into one project. There's some property donated to the zoo, as long as we use it within our core vision. Now that we have a lot of vision at the zoo, so exactly what we did with that was up to us. And we looked at it and realized part of this property, and it's what 600-700 acres. Part of it historically was a wetland, so we went in, and with CRP money, Conservation Reserve Program, we were able to take this land. We went in, broke up the tiles that drained the wetland for agricultural purposes. We were able to go in and build dikes and have a little bit of seed money. We've also picked up a second grant, NACA, the North American Wetlands Conservation Act, which basically allowed us to get a production facility out there to generate plants for this wetland. So with that as our vision, we went out and basically did a bio blitz. Before we did anything, we surveyed everything out there. And as you can imagine, it wasn't exactly, exciting with some of the species. It was very, rather common species. But as we built this, as we put the plants in, as we developed the wetland and really were able to get this habitat to come along in basically 2 years, we've already had, the bird sightings out there. We have bald eagle. We have sora rails. We have sandhill cranes. It's not unusual to go out there and see half a dozen duck species at any given point.
And bobolinks.
I was going to say, is certainly one of my favorites. When they arrived, it was a highlight. And to do this all with volunteer labor and with grants, we are really able to put a lot back in. And for me, wetlands have always been a favorite habitat to explore, but Ohio has lost a larger percentage of wetlands than any other state in the union at 90%. Mm. We had some of the greatest marshes up along Lake Erie. We had the great Black Swamp, a lot of these areas. And certainly in southern Ohio with the agricultural benefit, a lot of small areas were drained and turned into agriculture. Mm-hmm. So to put this back into wetlands and then immediately see species return within months, great egrets and everything are birds showing up, to me, it's one of the most satisfying projects I think I've ever been associated with.
It reminds me of a bumper sticker I first saw out west. I was in college. I lived at home in Florida and went to college in Florida. And so for a summer, I got to go out west and do some work. And naturally, I was just enamored. We all dream of the American West. So I saw a pickup truck, and it ends up it was somebody who worked at the U.S. Forest Service. And he had a, Smokey the Bear hat, the whole thing, green government pickup truck. But the bumper sticker was my favorite. It said, habitat equals wildlife. And while it's more complex than just that, there's a lot of that that's true, because that's what you're talking about. You restored a wetland and bang.
You can do a lot out there. But again, yes, it all starts with the habitat. And I think that certainly within my lifetime, as this part of the county gets a lot of urbanization out there, I think that it's large enough that we not only have a small piece of the puzzle, we actually have enough to basically create an ecosystem. So mm-hmm. as everything gets eaten up around there with residential, housing or strip malls or whatever that ends up being long term, I think we have enough there that we have a large enough piece of the puzzle that we can still have intact ecosystems. And to me, it's very important, because when I was a child, green space meant natural areas. And today, green space means a soccer field. And it's not quite the same thing.
Yeah, no kidding. Now, talking about native plants, coming up at the zoo, I guess this weekend, you're going to have a native plant sale.
The native plant sale is going to be at the wetlands in Warren County,
okay,
which
that's
is
important.
On 2210 Mason Montgomery Road. And the facility will be open to the public, which is not the norm. So we'll be open this Saturday. And with that, we'll have one of the largest native plant sales that we've ever had. We'll have probably a couple hundred species of wildflowers available, from sun to shade, you name it, we should have it. We're also going to be having hikes around the wetland on the hour. The wetland's a little dry right now. being vernal, it's drier through the summer, but the rains will bring it back. But we'll certainly have hikes around there, show some of our species, what we're doing out there, the production facilities. And the great thing is, anybody wants to stop out and walk through, there'll certainly be enough volunteers there to show, if you need help selecting plants, we'll have them all available. All the plants are native to the Midwest. And if you want to plant for hummingbirds, or if you want to plant for, goldfinches, we can certainly help you out with that. And it's really going to be a fun event. And then we'll have some animals there, some native, probably some hawks and owls and things there periodically through the day. And it should be a fun time to get the whole family out. And it's free and open to the public, so yeah. it would be great.
So it's this Saturday, September
27th.
What time?
I think the time is about 9 to 3 or so in the afternoon.
Okay, so 9 in the morning till 3 in the afternoon. Folks interested in helping their garden, growing some new native plants, or seeing what can happen with a restored wetland, it'll be worth doing. It's up in Warren County at the zoo's Boyer Farm. And Brian will be there, and as you can tell, he'll show you what's going on. Brian, thanks for spending a few minutes with us.
Thanks, Dane. Thanks for having me.
You bet. My guest has been Brian Jorg from the Cincinnati Zoo and Botanical Garden. I'm Thane Maynard.
One quick update on our earlier talk with David Wecker, a listener who called asking about Jerry Stein, the former dance critic. Jerry Stein, alive and well and active at the Christ Church Cathedral downtown. You've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. You can find archives and links for Cincinnati Edition stories at WVXU.org. Technical director for today's show was Kevin Rowinski. Producer was Pete Reitmeier with help from Kevin Reynolds. William White composed the Cincinnati Edition theme music. I'm Mark Purzel. Thanks for listening. Stay tuned for Science Friday next on 91.7 WVXU.